Pianist Shai Wozner is known for his unusual pairing of new music with the standard repertoire. We sat down to discuss his new album Impromptu, which features improvisationally inspired works by 7 different composers. He reflects on the theme of improvisation that unites these individual works.
The idea was to see what each composer does with the concept of impromptu. That can be many things, but mostly in a spontaneous piece of music. It doesn't have too many rules to it. It can be a lot of things to a lot of different composers. And I decided to go with some of the most familiar examples of the genre and some less familiar ones, and to see what each of them does with it, as if they were commissioned to do this, even though they've long been dead. Each of these composers was a great improviser, and I'm sure that they got a lot of their ideas from just sitting down at the piano and improvising and waiting for something to happen. I think that these pieces capture that feeling. They capture the spontaneity of just making something up on the spot and rolling with it, and to amazing results. They could not be more different from each other. Some of them have recognizable patterns to it, like, you know, the Schubert is a set of variations. One of them is a set of variations. Whereas the Beethoven fantasy is literally like sitting in the room and hearing the guy improvise away. It's unlike anything and seems to follow a stream of consciousness. The idea was to have the variety of different improvisations, and yet the unifying principle is they all have the creative urge to improvise, to find their ideas.
There are 4 impromptus by Franz Schubert interspersed throughout the recording. Shai explained the reason for this.
We tend to associate impromptus with Schubert nowadays because his are perhaps the most famous and certainly some of the most substantial ones. He himself did not conceive them as a set, I don't think. He conceived them as individual pieces that were published together as a set. But each of them works as a separate piece, so I decided to just spread them out between very, very different pieces by later composers and see how they interact and how they resonate with each other and how they sometimes lead from one to the other as if they were meant to follow one another even though they were written centuries apart. I think because the Schuberts are so substantial, so elaborate, they're the longest pieces of all of the pieces in the recording. They sort of serve as anchors to the whole playlist, if you will.
The comparison between the works of old school composers and those by later composers is rather interesting.
What's surprising is that you see some of the daring improvisations come from the earlier ones, the Beethoven being, of course, the most daring one. The Ives is actually a very, very subtle and delicate improvisation, and it is actually the only real improvisation of all of them. He was actually recorded in a studio improvising while he was there for sessions to record other pieces. So this is an actual improvisation that was transcribed after the fact. So he did make this up on the spot. But some of the other ones, even though they are fully written out, are clearly very improvisational and retain the spontaneity of an improvisation.
As we listen to excerpts from Impromptu, Shai talks about many of the works, beginning with Liszt, Chopin, and Beethoven, and continuing with Gershwin and Ives.
There is such a wealth of piano repertoire by Liszt. I mean, so many pieces, countless pieces. And for me, this is a real gem among them, not very famous. And you can tell how he's sort of just starting with a chord. He's, you know, he's repeating the same chord a couple times to see, okay, let's see, what can I do with this? Oh, yeah, I'm going to go here. And then he takes that idea and elaborates on that. And then the end of the piece, which is really not very long. The end of the piece, he's going back to that very first chord of the opening and sort of just contemplates it, like you, as if you take a beautiful object in your hand, a very small object, and you contemplate it from different angles. That's sort of what he does at the end of this piece. It's like, it's not going anywhere. He's just there and you know, enjoying the sound of the piano, enjoying the feel of that chord. It's really something like, you know, what you would expect from someone who's improvising, almost like a jazz musician. Chopin is a very, very different type of guy. He needs things to be meticulously put together. And I know that sounds contradictory to an improvisation, and he was a great improviser, but he also was exceptionally organized in his music, which Liszt wasn't always. It just was not necessarily a priority for him. He worked very differently. And Chopin, the three impromptus are very different from each other. The first one is one of the lighter pieces, almost comical, I would say. And I don't know, whenever I hear it, whenever I play it, I can't help thinking of a salon with a lot of people, you know, very well-dressed up people chatting away. And then somebody comes in and sings a beautiful aria. And then the aria stops and then they just go back to talking as if nothing happened. For me, that's the first one. But the second one is a very different story. It's, for me, one of the most amazing pieces of Chopin. And he somehow miraculously manages to squeeze in an entire epic into less than 5 minutes. It's very short, very, very compact. And yet you feel at the end of it like you just heard a big epic story. And it's formally, it's very daring. It's unlike anything else. It's very spontaneous. And yet it's tied together in a way that's totally inevitable. It feels like it just had to be this way. And it's really one of Chopin's most unique creations, the one opus 36. The last one, opus 51, is a typically late piece, very melancholy, I would say. And what's so daring about it, I think in this case, the daring aspect is in the middle part. He lets the left hand take over the piece in a way. You know, usually the melody you have in the right hand and the left hand is accompanying, which is what happens at the beginning of this piece and at the end. But in the middle, you have the left hand just taking charge. And not only that, but it follows a very, very long phrase. It's like you have a big cello section starting this expansive melody that goes on and on and on and on. It's almost Wagnerian. It kind of reminds you that they lived at the same time. And it's a never-ending melody, so to speak. And then he goes back to repeating the first part. It's also kind of an unusual piece. I would say very potent and full of meaning. Like you feel like every note has weight to it. Beethoven, of course, was a great improviser. He was famous for that. And this piece is a real curiosity. It's not very famous, I know, but the fact is he published it and he gave it an opus number, which means he took it seriously. What's amazing about it is that it really is like an improvisation. It cuts from one idea to the next, almost like in a avant-garde movie. I mean, it's just, what's going on? You know, it starts out with this crazy scale out of the blue, and it has a lot of darting gestures and then silences and then another one and then silence and then a lyrical part. And then the lyrical part is cut in the middle and you have this Hungarian dance. It's almost like the editing floor of some movie. And the amazing thing about it is not just how unexpected and impulsive it is, but how he actually ties it together at the end. So for most of the piece, you have this succession, this stream of consciousness, succession of ideas that seem to have nothing in common. And yet at the end, he manages to bring it to a climax that is very organized and puts everything in perspective and somehow makes everything in hindsight look like, oh, of course. That's where it was all leading to. But in real time, you don't know that. It's really quite an experimental piece. And even though it's not called an impromptu, it's called a fantasy, but it really means the same thing. He is improvising. You can completely tell that this is something that came from an improvisation. Gershwin was not only a great composer of popular music, he was also a proud musical nerd who liked to explore theoretical ideas, such as writing a piece that has two keys at the same time. So the left hand seems to be in one key, the right hand seems to be in another key, and he just sort of imposes them one on top of the other, and that creates this beautiful color, this jazzy chord. It's not completely in two keys, but it sounds like it could be sort of on and off in different keys. But it's really mostly about the color of how he combines two harmonies in the two hands at the same time. If you played the same tune in one harmony, in one key, it wouldn't be nearly as special and as attractive. And that's what's so charming about this piece. The Ives, both of them, just seem to fit in between two other pieces that I meant to include here, as if I actually commissioned the guy to write them. They literally lead from one piece to the next, like perfect transitions. The end of the first Schubert impromptu, you know, he takes the note from the last chord of that impromptu and uses it to transition into a place that's just right for the next piece in the album. And the same with the other Ives piece. It's like I just ordered them to function as transitions, which the second one does not. And so they're used to transition from longer pieces by other composers, and I'm sure you wouldn't have minded.